Usually when we talk about horror, whether you are sitting in a dark movie theater or like playing a survival game on your couch, there's this built-in expectation of something visceral.
Right, something that just immediately grabs you.
Exactly. A grotesque monster jumping out of the shadows, or, a terrifying figure in a mask chasing you relentlessly through a dense forest. The threat is always physical, it is always immediate, and it's just, well, right there in your face.
Yeah, and it triggers our most basic primal fight or flight response, right? You see the fangs, your adrenaline spikes, and you run. It's a very straightforward biological reaction to a highly visible threat.
Totally. The mechanics of that kind of fear are incredibly well understood.
They are.
But what if the scariest thing you could possibly encounter isn't a monster hiding in your closet at all? What if the thing that makes your blood run cold is just a timestamp?
Oh, wow.
Like just a tiny, seemingly insignificant string of numbers attached to a text message sent from a dead person's phone.
And that is the precise moment where horror shifts away from a biological reflex, and becomes a psychological deep freeze. We are talking about weaponizing the mundane.
Weaponizing the mundane. I love that. And that is our mission for today. So welcome to the deep dive.
Today, we are bringing you a fascinating exploration into a profoundly unsettling, yet kind of brilliant concept in game design.
It really is brilliant.
We are looking at how the everyday, completely ordinary apps on our smartphones, the ones you're probably checking right now, can be transformed into the landscape of a terrifying murder mystery.
Yeah, and our source material for this is an entry from a really fascinating developer diary series called I Am the AI Game Producer.
Right.
Specifically, we are unpacking part two of this series, which is titled The Last 72 Hours on a Dead Person's Phone.
Such a great title.
It is, and the diary details the conceptualization of a game called Dead Signal. But what makes this uniquely compelling is the methodology. The developer isn't just like writing this game on a whiteboard.
No, they're using Claude Code AI, right? Exactly. They are actively using Claude Code AI to architect the narrative systems and the temporal logic. They are using artificial intelligence to figure out how to perfectly simulate the chaos of human data.
I have to tell you, reading through these developer notes completely changed how I look at the piece of glass and metal sitting in my pocket. The developer is outlining a game that entirely abandons graphic violence and jump scares.
Which is so rare in horror games.
It really is. Instead, it relies on raw data to generate pure dread.
And to understand the mechanics of that dread, we really should look at how the game positions the player from the very first minute.
Right, the setup, the premise hooks you instantly. You are playing as an investigative journalist, and you are looking into a serial murder case that has gone completely cold.
Three victims.
Three victims, absolutely zero leads. The local police have hit a brick wall. Then, out of nowhere, an anonymous package arrives at your desk. You tear it open, and inside is the third victim's smartphone.
Just sitting there.
Yeah, and taped to the back of it is a note containing just two words, 72 hours. Right. Your objective is clear, but incredibly daunting. You have to navigate this device and reconstruct the victim's final 72 hours of life to figure out what happened to them.
The developer's diary notes that to fully grasp why this setup is so paralyzing, you have to contrast it with their previous project, a game called Inside Job.
Okay, yeah.
Inside Job was constructed as a closed system. You played an auditor investigating a corporate network. You had rigid
Like
boundaries.
you couldn't really leave the network.
Exactly. There was a defined chain of evidence, a set list of exactly five suspects, and all the information you needed lived entirely within that company's isolated digital ecosystem.
So the tension there wasn't about physical danger.
No, it was about moral ambiguity.
Got it. So if the first game, Inside Job, was a locker room mystery like the game Clue, then Dead Signal is like finding a treasure map where the X leads you into a dark, terrifying forest.
That scavenger hunt analogy gets to the core of the AI's design philosophy here perfectly.
It's open, right?
Yes. Dead Signal is engineered as an open system. The data you uncover on this victim's phone doesn't just loop back to other safe, isolated files on the same device. It points aggressively outward into the physical world.
So you aren't just reading internal corporate memos.
Exactly. You are pulling up geolocations hidden in photo metadata that lead to abandoned warehouses on the outskirts of the city. You are reading fragmented text conversations where the victim clearly sensed they were being followed, but for some reason deliberately chose not to go to the police.
The evidence bleeds off the screen and into reality.
It does.
And that lack of boundaries is inherently terrifying. I mean, in a closed system, you know the rules of engagement. But when a phone points to a real-world abandoned warehouse, your mind instantly fills that empty space with the worst possible scenarios.
It's human nature.
But this brings up a huge logistical hurdle for the actual design of the game. If you're building an open system where the narrative exists out in the real world, how does the developer force a player to navigate that massive mystery when the player's only window into it is a tiny simulated digital screen?
Well, the developer solves this by making the player master the one invisible thread that binds all human experience and all digital data together. Yeah. Time.
Time.
Right, because the phone points to a vast outside world that you cannot physically visit within the game's mechanics. You can only make sense of the external world by understanding exactly when things happened. Time becomes the core mechanical engine of the entire experience.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about time on a smartphone, it is not like reading a novel from page 1 to page 200.
Oh, not at all.
It's an absolute mess.
It really is. The developer highlights this fragmented temporal logic beautifully, and it is exactly where the Claude Code AI becomes vital. Think about how you actually consume information on your own device. It is never presented chronologically as a cohesive narrative, right?
No, of course not.
If you open your Messages app, the logic is grouped by conversation, not by the minute every single text arrived.
But your call log, conversely, is strictly chronological.
Exactly. Your photo gallery might be sorted by the date the image was taken, but your notes app, that might be sorted by last modified.
Which means a grocery list from 3 years ago suddenly jumps to the top of the screen just because the victim accidentally added a space to it?
Yes. So as the player, you are dropped into this chaotic, fragmented timeline. You have to bounce between all these different applications, each speaking a completely different language of time.
And your main job is to cross-reference these scattered digital fragments to rebuild a definitive hour-by-hour timeline of the victim's last 72 hours.
That's the core loop.
But wait, I have to push back here. Playing devil's advocate for a second, if the timeline is just a jumbled mess of different apps, wouldn't I just grab a pen and a legal pad?
What do you mean? Like, I would write down every single timestamp from every app, sort them chronologically on physical paper, and essentially turn the game into a boring spreadsheet. How does the developer stop players from ruining the tension by just brute-forcing the data?
That is a fantastic point, and it's actually where Claude Code's AI architecture becomes the backbone of the game. If this were a traditionally scripted game, your legal pad strategy would absolutely break the immersion.
Right.
But the AI didn't just write a linear script. It built a relational database heavily padded with simulated human noise.
So a timestamp by itself isn't enough.
Exactly. A timestamp in isolation gives you zero narrative value. You might write down that a text was sent at 10:15 a.m., but the context of that text relies entirely on an unsent email draft last modified at 9:00 a.m.
Oh, I see.
And that draft only makes sense if you notice a background GPS ping at 9:45 a.m.
So a chronological list actually misleads you. It flattens the context. The friction is the entire point. The AI introduces contradictory data. A time zone shift because the victim took a brief flight. A smartwatch syncing delay that pushes a heart rate spike 10 minutes late.
Wow.
Yeah, your notepad won't save you because you have to intuitively understand the relationship between the apps, not just the number.
That is wild.
By forcing you to actively invest your cognitive energy into decrypting the messy context, the game forces you to become the detective. When the pieces finally snap together, the realization isn't a cutscene happening to a digital character. It's a revelation happening directly in your own brain.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the developer diary walks us through a specific sequence to prove exactly how this data-driven horror operates. Reading the sequence genuinely gave me goosebumps.
Mm.
Let's walk through the timeline together.
Let's do it.
Okay, so you're digging through the simulated phone. You find a text message sent on Wednesday at 11 p.m. The victim texts an unknown number, and the message is just two words. I know.
A statement dripping with ominous implication, but completely devoid of any clarifying context.
Right. So you switch apps. You go to the photo gallery. You scroll until you find a new photo that appears. Timestamped Thursday at 2 a.m. It's an underexposed, blurry picture of darkness and an open window.
Creepy.
Very. You dig into the file's properties and check the metadata. The geolocation coordinates point to that warehouse on the outskirts of the city we mentioned earlier.
So you now have a narrative arc forming in your mind. Wednesday night, a confrontation or realization.
Yeah.
Thursday early morning, a physical location that implies either a break-in or a desperate escape.
Then you jump back to the phone app and check the call log. You find an entry for Thursday afternoon. It reveals a 47-minute phone call. You cross-reference the number that was dialed against your police case file. It is the phone number belonging to the very first victim of the serial killer.
And this is the exact moment the bottom drops out of the player's stomach.
Why?
Because if you have absorbed your case file, you know a critical, immutable fact about that first victim. That person died 3 weeks ago.
A 47-minute phone call to someone who has been dead for weeks. As the developer writes, the chilling punchline is unavoidable. Someone is answering a dead person's phone.
What's fascinating here is the absolute absence of a physical monster. There's no blood rendering, no screaming audio track, no jump scare cord. The AI has engineered a gap in the data.
Just a gap?
Yes. There is no recording of the call, just the log of its existence. It is just three pieces of cold, hard data. A text, a photo's coordinates, and a duration log.
Yet when you synthesize those three mundane data points, your brain instantly conjures a vivid, horrifying image of a killer sitting in a dark room holding a deceased victim's phone, having a nearly hour-long conversation with your current victim.
It is so much worse than seeing a 3D modeled monster, because whatever your brain paints in that negative space is perfectly tailored to terrify you personally. The AI creates the framework, and your imagination fills in the gore.
The developer shares another example of this data horror in the diary that is just as insidious.
Oh, the encrypted note.
Yes. You are digging through the phone's local files, and you find an encrypted note. You spend 30 minutes figuring out the victim's password logic to decrypt it. Inside, you find a single name.
Just one name.
Just one name. You search that name across the phone's data, cross-reference it with your police files, and you realize something awful. This specific name appears in the personal contact lists of all three victims.
Which shatters the comforting illusion of random violence. It reveals that the killer wasn't a faceless stranger stalking them from the shadows.
It was someone they knew.
Exactly. The killer was someone deeply trusted by everyone involved. It was someone firmly entrenched in their inner circle. It is a massive emotional gut punch delivered entirely through a 2-kilobyte text file.
It turns the mindless act of scrolling, something we all do for hours a day without thinking, into the act of unearthing landmines.
It really does.
But if the game is fundamentally just looking at test logs and metadata, the developer runs the risk of the player feeling like they are just auditing a spreadsheet. How do they prevent the interface itself from feeling boring?
By ensuring the visual interface is as oppressive as the data itself. The developer notes outline a highly specific visual atmosphere designed to heighten the psychological weight.
Like it's not a normal phone screen.
No, not at all. You aren't looking at a bright, colorful, welcoming screen. The interface is an Android phone layout rendered almost entirely in deep, suffocating blacks with cold, sterile blue accents.
It is designed from the ground up to feel profoundly isolating. It doesn't look like a phone you'd want to use.
Crucially, it is not a pristine device. The AI is programmed to manipulate the visual fidelity based on the player's cognitive discoveries.
Wait, how so?
During key realization moments, like when you finally cross-reference that 47-minute call to the dead person, the screen begins to exhibit subtle, sickening glitch effects. Signal interference.
Ah, I see.
The visual design reinforces the title of the game. The phone literally is the dead signal. It is the final, degrading broadcast from someone who has been silenced forever.
It feels like you are holding a digital ghost in your hands. But orchestrating how a player interacts with that ghost brings up what the developer calls their most difficult design challenge.
Right, and it wasn't the AI implementation or the code architecture, it was managing the emotional pacing.
If you look back at Inside Job, the emotional arc there was a slow, steady burn. You start with professional curiosity, and over several hours, it slowly morphs into a moral dilemma as you uncover corporate secrets.
It is a highly cerebral, deliberate journey. Dead Signal requires a completely different, much steeper emotional trajectory to maintain its horror.
The developer breaks this required pacing down into distinct psychological stages. First, you have curiosity.
You get the mysterious package, you turn on the phone, and you just want to solve the puzzle.
Second is pattern recognition. You start linking the timestamps, deciphering the AI's simulated noise, and you feel incredibly smart.
Like a real detective.
Right. Third, the dread drops in. You hit that sequence with the warehouse and the call log, and the chilling realization washes over you that the killer was physically right there, incredibly close to the victim.
But then the developer introduces a final stage.
The ultimate twist in the conceptual design that absolutely floored me.
This raises an important question about the boundaries of the game space we discussed earlier. Up until this point, you have been digging strictly through the past. You were acting as a historian of a tragedy, safely insulated by the passage of time.
But what happens when the past suddenly catches up to the present?
Exactly.
You have meticulously mapped out the 72 hours. You know exactly how close the killer was to the victim at the end. And then a new, paralyzing, logical conclusion enters your mind.
The killer knew the victim had this specific phone.
So does the killer know that you have the phone right now?
And the developer drops this bombshell idea for the climax of the game. You are holding the device, staring at three-day-old data, and suddenly, the screen lights up. The phone vibrates. It receives a brand new incoming message.
So the game completely flips the dynamic. You start as the hunter, the journalist looking for clues. But by receiving a new message, you suddenly become the hunted. How does that change the listener's relationship with their own devices?
It is a brilliant, terrifying subversion of the player's role. You spend the entire runtime of the game feeling like the hunter. You are the intrepid journalist, sitting safely in your office, separated from the violence by time and distance, clinically dissecting clues.
But the exact fraction of a second that phone vibrates with a new message in real time,
the entire dynamic violently inverts. The perceived safety of analyzing a closed case completely evaporates. The open system of the game suddenly violently includes you, the player.
The killer isn't just out there in the abstract world of the victim.
No, they are actively aware of the investigator. It collapses the distance between the player and the threat in a way that feels incredibly violating.
It is so violating. It makes me think about how deeply personal and vulnerable our relationship is with our devices. We view our smartphones as these impenetrable, encrypted vaults of our private lives.
But they are also active beacons.
Yes. They constantly connect us to the outside world, which means the outside world can reach back and touch us at any moment. A notification chime is usually a hit of dopamine, a friend reaching out, a package being delivered. Dead signal fundamentally rewrites that psychology. It turns a standard notification into an active, lethal threat.
It is a profound manipulation of our modern digital psychology. By using fragmented timestamps, geolocation metadata, and the basic everyday architecture of phone applications, the AI conceptualizes a sense of dread that a traditional, graphically intensive monster movie could never achieve.
It preys on our inherent, unspoken understanding of how digital communication works.
And then slightly twists those familiar rules to make the mundane terrifying.
It really is a masterpiece of concept design and a fascinating look at how AI can structure narrative mechanics. To summarize our journey today, Dead Signal shows us that you do not need a massive graphics engine or $1 million animation budget to create pure horror.
Definitely not.
You just need an open system, a ticking clock, and the chilling realization that raw data tells a story that ultimately ends in silence. It uses the mundane tools we rely on every single day to force us to reconstruct a tragedy, ultimately turning our own pattern-seeking brains against us.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it makes you wonder where the developer goes from here. Because this diary entry is only part two of the I Am the AI Game Producer series.
Oh, right. There's a teaser at the end.
At the very end of the notes, the developer leaves us with a teaser for the third and final game they are conceptualizing alongside Claude Code. It is a game titled Shadow Access. And they explicitly note that it is the most disturbing concept yet.
Why is that?
Because in Dead Signal, you are searching a dead stranger's phone. But in Shadow Access, the mechanics are turned inward. You are searching your own.
Which is a whole other level of terrifying that we will definitely have to explore another time. But for now, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with something to think about.
Okay.
So what does this all mean?
That's the big question.
We have spent this entire time talking about how a simulated killer uses metadata to reconstruct a life. But step outside the game for a second. Think about your own phone right now. Every single timestamp, every location ping, every app you open and close is being meticulously logged.
Every single action.
Right. If a video game can use basic metadata to build a terrifyingly accurate profile of a person's life and secrets, what does it mean that real-world data brokers and AI algorithms are doing this exact same thing to your phone every single second of the day?
That is a chilling thought.
They aren't doing it to solve a murder, obviously. They're doing it to predict your behavior, package your habits, and sell your digital ghost for profit. Are you the hunter of your own data, or have you been the hunted all along?
Wow.
Yeah. Until next time, keep an eye on your timestamps.